The hundreds of millions and maybe even billions have been sent to help the folks of Haiti. None of that money seems to do much good. Then someone decided to plant mangoes in Haiti. And so today we pause to ask, how did they get something so delicious to grow for profit in Haiti?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1038th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Bern who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
My pleasure, sir.
Have you ever tasted a Francique mango from Haiti?
Oh, that sounds really good right about now.
But you haven't tasted one.
I don't know that I have.
Well, Kelly Bayer, producer, have you ever tasted a Francique mango from Haiti?
A Frank what?
Yep, there it is. Okay, so we have a puzzle. There's something very delicious, and it's coming out of Haiti, and we're going to track it down today. Folks, hundreds of millions of dollars, and maybe even billions, have been sent to Haiti to help the Haitians. But in spite of the best efforts and good intentions of many, including a former president, his first lady, and their family foundation, not much of that money seems to help a lot. And all the money, it seems, kind of disappears before it hits the ground, kind of like verga under a warming tropical sun. For just one example, a federal audit of the $1.14 billion the U.S. Congress approved to help the Haitians recover from the earthquake in 2010 was found to have been sent to Haiti with, and I quote, virtually no accountability. In other words, the $1 billion simply disappeared before it hit the ground, like verga under a warming tropical sun. But then someone remembered that ages-old admonition, give me a fish and I will eat today, teach me to fish and I will eat always. And with that in mind, they realized that Haiti and Haitians could be taught to produce something someone would want to buy. And so they worked with the Haitian people to plant mangoes, very special mangoes, to feed people who have a taste for something unique and special in the metropolitan markets of the world. And so today we pause to ask, how did they get something so delicious to grow for profit in Haiti? And today we've got three people who were in on that project to one extent or another. People in the know on how to get things to work in Haiti. We're going to start with Matt Rogers, who is the Global Produce Coordinator from Whole Foods. Matt, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having us back.
Pleased to have you aboard. Global Produce Coordinator, does that mean you hang about Haiti and places exotic like that and get produce?
It means I'm one of a few people at Whole Foods Market who get to work with all of our suppliers and figure out where everything comes from, and yeah, we get to work on, Haitian mangoes is one of the most exciting and inspiring things that I get to do each year.
Well, if, for the benefit of the folks, what, and us here in the studio, what the heck is a Francique mango?
Well, Francique mango is a unique variety of mango, grows in Haiti, really only. I think there may be a few in some other countries around the world, but for the most part, it's a unique variety of mango that grows in Haiti, and it's available only during a short season each spring. There are these beautiful, plump, juicy mangoes, and really very unique compared to other mangoes that we get in the United States.
So two things about them are special. One, they just like grow in Haiti, and two, you can only get them at a very special time of the year, right?
Yes, and their flavor is quite distinct. It's really this rich flesh and really distinct tropical flavor to this fruit.
Ooh. And now, how on earth am I supposed to taste that?
Well, we sell them at Whole Foods.
When?
Usually we start in May, late May, and we'll run for about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on many factors, predominantly the weather. in the Caribbean during the spring is always a little touchy. Mm-hmm. So we'll have them at Whole Foods in all of our stores for those 6 to 8 weeks, whatever it is each year.
So kind of like the only time you can get them is like early summer at Whole Foods and maybe some other places around the world.
That's right. At Whole Foods, certainly here in California, we're probably going to be the only place where you can find them. There may be some others elsewhere, but as I hope we'll talk about, you know, the ones that we're buying and the work that we're doing and the way that we buy them is really unique.
Which,
in the northeast of the United States, these mangoes are available. You know, in Miami and New York, there are a lot of Haitian mangoes that come to the United States each season. And people in those areas will be familiar with the fruit. They'll find them in fruit stands. They'll find them in retailers. But the only place you'll find fair trade certified and organic mangoes is at Whole Foods.
Fair trade certified. That takes us to our next guest, Hannah Freeman, who is from Fair Trade USA. Hannah, welcome aboard the food chain. Pleased to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're up in where? Seattle someplace?
I'm in the beautiful Columbia River Gorge.
Oh,
yeah.
And that is a beautiful river gorge. If there ever was a beautiful one, that's one. Fair Trade USA, Matt just talked about the Francique mangoes as being certified fair trade. But for the benefit of all of us who do not know what that means, what does it mean?
That's a great question. So fair trade certification means that the product comes from a supply chain and a farm with high social and environmental standards. In the case of these Haitian mangoes, it comes from small farmers, very small farmers. Usually they have 1, 2, 3 trees each, and they pool their resources, pool their mangoes, form co-ops, and market their mangoes together.
So when you say small farm, you're really talking small farm.
Very small farm, yes.
So these are essentially not even farms anyway. They're kind of like somebody with a couple of mango trees in the backyard.
Yeah, in many cases it is. Sometimes they have a small plot with a couple of mango trees, and they also plant beans or corn. Mm-hmm. Around the mango trees during the season.
So these are truly subsistence farmers in the true sense of the word then.
Very much so.
And all of a sudden, they have access to the worldwide market.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And part of the reason they have access to the worldwide market is because they connected with somebody who could figure out how to get them to the worldwide market, and that would be John Musser of Tropic Trade. John, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Good morning, Michael.
Pleased to have you aboard. Heard a lot about you and the incredible work that you've done in Haiti. What is Tropic Trade?
Tropic Trade is a company that I started in 2009 with the specific objective of importing fair trade certified and organically certified mangoes and bananas from Haiti and Peru into the U.S. markets.
Mm-hmm. And you add another moniker onto the chain of monikers for these things, and that is ethical. You're concerned about the food being grown ethically. And what exactly does that mean?
Well, it means complete transparency in terms of who gets paid what and who the relationships, commercial relationships, through the food chain. So that, for instance, fair trade, one thing that Hannah could have mentioned is that there is a minimum pricing component to it, which is generally higher than the pricing that non-fair trade certified producers would receive, as well as a social development premium on top for community development. So this is a step beyond conventional produce business in terms of ethics.
Well, and looking back at the conventional produce business or agriculture in general, it seems that most of the business is dominated by people who sit between those who grow things and those who eat things. And that seems to be what you folks are turning upside down. Am I wrong?
No, we have a supply chain. It just happens to be very short and very transparent. It includes our exporter from Haiti, myself, Tropic Trade as the importer, and Whole Foods Market as the customer.
Yes, but I guess what I was trying to say is that the domination of that those people who traditionally sat in the middle was to give those who grow things the very least and charge those who buy things the very most. And that seems to be what you're turning upside down.
Oh, that's right, Michael. That's completely turned upside down. I think if you asked any economics professor about whether it makes sense to pay growers more for a commodity-type product with the hope that you can then charge more for it in the market, you would probably get a C-.
Well, I love C-. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about how on earth somebody figured out how to grow very sweet mangoes in a very tough place, that place being Haiti. When we get back, we're going to ask what makes Haiti such a tough place to make things work. Food Chain, right back. Do stay tuned. We will be back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, folks, buckle your seatbelt. We're flying off to the Caribbean in the company of Matt Rogers of Whole Foods, John Musser of Tropic Trade, Hannah Freeman of Fair Trade USA, heading for the island of Hispaniola. You take that big, beautiful island and you draw a line north to south right down the middle of the island. To the east, you have the Dominican Republic, where things seem to work. To the west, you have Haiti, where things don't seem to work. An associate visited the Dominican Republic just a couple of years back and was curious about the difference between the two sides of this one island. But when she expressed an interest in visiting the Haiti side, was told, no, don't go there. There is no there, so just stay away. And she did what she was told. She was told that 98% of the nation of Haiti had been deforested. And so why go there? So she didn't. If there is nothing there, it's not for lack of good intentions nor efforts, and certainly not from taxpayer money. So first question of the day to the people that we have with us today who actually work there is why don't things seem to work in Haiti when they do seem to work in the Dominican Republic? Matt, you want to start that one off?
Well, I'm by no means a development expert or a political expert on Haiti. I mean, from my inexpert observations over years of traveling to Haiti and sort of paying attention, I think it's just due to a whole long list of combination of different trajectories over history, different political trajectories, different economic opportunities or not, different government leadership and the two sides of the same island have ended up in very different places. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot written about it and a lot of history to it, but the reality is, we have in Haiti, one of the poorest countries in this hemisphere, right off our borders.
That's right. John, you're a hands-on guy down there. What would you say to the question?
Well, I would have to say it goes back to 1804 when Haiti became the first black republic to be independent in the Western Hemisphere. And to do that, they had to shrug off the French plantocracy and take over the lands. And as a price for that, the French exacted a huge fine of payments from the government of Haiti to France as reparations over the years, which essentially drained the country of capital for well over the next 100 years. So that was a start.
And the Haitians let them get away with that?
The Haitians basically had no choice in the matter. They were still dominated by the French, although they were not a French colony anymore. But France was their major market for any of their products. And they still had an agricultural base, only now it had changed from being large plantations to individual small land holdings. So that was the genesis of it, I think.
Well, that's pretty darn specific. Hannah, what about you, Fairtrade USA? Would you have an insight into the question of why things don't seem to work in Haiti, whereas on the other side of the island they do?
Sure. Well, I'm also not a history expert, but I think, any country that has suffered so much, you know, either extraction of resources or in the last couple decades, a funnel of money that just floods into the NGO group down there, it's just hard to set yourself up as a thriving independent economy and democracy with those sorts of influences. So what we're trying to do is base what we do very much on business principles and fairness, so that farmers, know what to expect. They respond to market incentives by planting more trees. You know, back to your depiction of the border, I don't know if you've ever looked at a satellite picture from space of Haiti and Dominican Republic, but you can see from space where the green ends at the border. And Haiti begins with very barren landscapes. So giving folks market incentives that aren't exploited by the market, nor are they muddied by putting, charity into that picture, then you really have a pure way of getting trees back in the ground, getting more money back to farmers and communities.
Now, in my introduction, I threw in the old admonition, if you give me a fish, I will eat today. If you teach me to fish, I will eat always. It seems like what we have been doing for so long is trying to give Haiti the fish through all of the money that we've been pouring into that country. But so much of that money, like Verga, does not seem to touch ground there, or at least don't see anything, any of that progress. And so it seems like what you folks are trying to do is really turn that situation around and not give people something, but teach them how to sell something people want to buy.
You mean trade instead of aid?
Yes. Is that the general direction here?
That's our, I think that's one of our guiding principles in this program, is that people in the rural areas, the farmers, in order to stay in the rural areas, need to have a source of income there. And producing mangoes for export provides them, and they are the direct recipients of the money that goes back into Haiti for that, rather than having it filter through layers of bureaucracy and government.
Until none of it hits the ground, right?
It doesn't look like it.
It doesn't look like it to me. So, and part of that is finding a product that people will want to buy throughout the world. So, there seems to be a huge a partnership involved in this effort here. How did it come about, Matt? How did this partnership to actually, help the Haitians grow something that people would want to buy throughout the world, where was the genesis of that?
Well, our involvement goes back seven or eight years now, I guess. But, it's important to note that that mango trees have been planted in Haiti for quite a long time. And this French-seek mango has been a part of their export economy for quite a while. There are mango trees, and therefore, you know, really tens of thousands of very small mango farmers all over the country. And each year, as the mango harvest approaches, the sort of hustle and bustle of the annual season gets going. And they do export and have exported for many years lots of fruit to the United States. Mm-hmm. What's different here is that back in, John, help me out, I think it's 2008 or 2009, John Musser with Tropic Trade and Hannah from Fairtrade really approached us. I think it was that Fairtrade approached John saying, look, hey, there are these Fairtrade certified mangoes in Haiti. This is a place we can make a difference. Looks like it's right up your alley. John said, yeah, let me take a look, and ended up talking to us about it. And we were doing some other business in various other places. And as a result, you know, we had that supply chain kind of primed and started doing the work there to figure out how can we buy these mangoes in a different way. That will end up getting more money into the pockets of these small farmers for whom their mango crop might be some of their only cash income of the year.
And we're going to have to take a quick break, but boy, what a fun subject we have when we come back. How did we pull this one off? Folks, you're tuned into the 1038th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Michael Olson with Matt Rogers of Whole Foods, John Musser of Tropic Trade, Hannah Freeman of Fair Trade, and you're invited to participate. Have any questions? 831-479-1080. When we get back, how did you put together a coalition of people to teach them, the Haitians, how to grow mangoes for profit? Well, folks, we are in the Caribbean, Haiti to be specific, on the island of Hispaniola on the west side opposite the Dominican Republic. And we're looking at the development of a whole new industry for, no, let me take that back, the redevelopment of an industry in Haiti, the industry of the Francique mango, and how that effort is revolutionizing how small farmers of Haiti are getting some money in their pockets for perhaps the first time. I would like to go to John Musser from Tropic Trade. Quick question. Is Haiti a tropical Garden of Eden? Is it a beautiful tropical paradise, John?
Well, Haiti does have beauty spots. It's a very mountainous land with a number of microclimates from north to south. So there are beautiful beaches, there are cool mountains, but the sad reality of much of it is that it has been turned into desert by deforestation over the years, as people have cut down trees for fire and fuel.
Mm-hmm. So that is real poverty there for sure. Does Haiti grow any other crops besides mangoes?
They do. They grow bananas. They grow all the tropical crops, mm-hmm. really. But as far as export crops go, mangoes is by far the largest. And there is a new banana project down there which goes to Europe. They also have coffee, and a lot of the agriculture is for subsistence, import substitution, grow it so they can eat it.
Right. Hannah Freeman, you looked at Haiti and decided that you could make a difference there. How is it that Fairtrade USA, you know, what did you see there that led you to believe you could make a difference?
What we saw was we saw some well-intentioned efforts by NGOs over the many years, aid groups, to help farmers plant mango trees, helping them graft on the Francique variety, which is more marketable. But where many of those efforts fell short was linking those farmers to a market that would be steady and fair for them year after year after year. And so when we started working in Haiti, what we saw is farmers were starting to cut those massive mango trees down. Some of these are, you know, 60, 70 foot high mango trees producing hundreds and hundreds of of mangoes every year, and they were cutting them down because they could get $100 right away when they turned that tree into charcoal.
Whew.
They could only get, say, $20 by selling their mangoes. And when you need to feed a family, you need to pay school fees, getting that $100 right away sometimes made the difference between them eating or not that week, that season. But it meant trees were coming down, and next season they didn't have an income.
So someplace along the line, a mango must have fallen on your head.
Yeah, more than that.
More than that. So somehow you came to the conclusion that there's an opportunity there that other people were not seeing. When did you, what led you to that epiphany?
Well, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, I met Ursula, the exporter of these fair trade mangoes, at a trade show in Chicago. She was handing out samples of this mango for people that were walking by her booth to try, and I tasted it, and the rest is history. It's just a fabulous tasting mango. There is nothing like it anywhere else that you can get in the U.S. market. And so that's the thing that makes this program so compelling. It's not charity. It's a really special product. And so we started talking about certification, and we started talking about who in the market, like John and Whole Foods, could step up and help us get these mangoes to market.
Wow. So it was the taste. You have something that's truly special. And you could make it, it was obviously special to begin with. But your notion was that you could make it even more special by giving it a fair trade certification.
Sure. And the important part there is with fair trade certification, we were able to double the farmer's income. And that gives them a powerful incentive to keep those roots in the ground and make that tree produce year after year after year. Where you wouldn't have that if we were just sending these mangoes through the normal channels to the normal market.
Well, Matt Rogers, Whole Foods, are we willing, we consumers of mangoes, are we willing to pay twice the price for something that's called fair trade?
Well, I don't know about twice the price, but it's not necessary. It's not that dramatic. You know, the way we look at it, you know, I think in general, when you can make a verifiable, you know, backed up claim like a fair trade certification, there are people who understand what that means and who recognize that that represents work to reestablish the value in the value chain, and that might mean that the product's going to cost more because we're reorganizing to get more money to people who need it. And so what we, you know, in this program, we've looked at how do you sort of add value to this fruit in a way that is reliable. So for us as buyers, you know, you use the fair trade certification is a real tool for us to know, all right, we're going to invest in this. We're going to pay more for this fruit. We want to know that that money is making it all the way through the various people in the supply chain back to that farmer.
Otherwise, it's really not what it's being pitched as, right?
That's right. So, you know, customers, it's all very variable how much people are willing to pay or how mm-hmm. much you can get in the market for a different item at a different time. But in general, fair trade represents more value on a product because you know more and you know that people are getting more into their pocket, whether they be a farm worker on a large farm somewhere or whether they be a small farmer like in this case.
Mm-hmm. Did we lose you? Hello, hello?
Hey, Michael, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Did you lose me?
I think we had a temporary glitch of some kind, but that happens periodically. So it seems like you have something that's special to start with, the Francique mango, which is only available a couple months of the year. You make it even more special by giving it a certified label, which means that it really is. There are people keeping track of where the money goes, so it really is reaching those people who grew it, and thus giving us consumers out here in the world an opportunity to not only enjoy something special, but help some special people. Right?
That's right. And, you know, the another way that we've added value is with organic certification.
There you go. That's the next question. John, great. We're going to pick that up when we get back from the break. Got a break coming up. Want to pick that up. But most specifically, how on earth did you catch together all of the time, the money, and the know-how, and the people behind them to make this very special project work so that the money, that those special Francique mangoes reach the market way on the other side of the continent, and those of us who are wondering what on earth are these can actually enjoy them, we can invest our money in them, and we can build a whole new industry with very special people. Right back. Welcome back to the Caribbean island of Haiti, where they grow the Francique mango. And not only do they grow it, but they are certified to grow it in a ethical way. And that means that they get most of the, or a big portion of the money, instead of all the money going to a few middlemen, which is kind of turning the whole classic colonial exploitation of developing nations upside down. And it's a model in which we city people are taking our money and voting for a different kind of world, the kind of world in which those small farmers who have a few mango trees in their yard can actually make some money with those trees. But it didn't just come easy. It had to be fought for, and a big coalition of people had to do it. Kind of takes time, money, and know-how to pull all that together, and the time means somebody has to be there growing the mangoes. And John Musser from Tropic Trade, I guess you had a hand in pulling the farmers together on this, right?
Well, yeah, at a kind of a high level, Michael, because as you can imagine, we have thousands of growers down there, and just communication with them, half of whom are illiterate, by the way, mm-hmm. is a constant challenge. So it demands structure, and a lot of that was part of what Fairtrade USA brought with the fair trade system of administration, keeping checks and balances, auditing, and accountability, let's say.
Well, Hannah Freeman, Fairtrade USA, how on earth did you enforce structure on thousands of small farmers, half of whom are illiterate?
That's a great question. The fair trade standards are really about democracy and transparency. So we ask that farmers democratically elect leaders in their community to help administer the mango business for their community, and that they are transparent back to their community with all the finances involved there. So we're not down there doing things for them. We've had some great NGO partners like TechnoServe doing great training for those farmers. But it's really farmers doing for themselves, and what we bring is the level of accountability that it's democratic and transparent.
So kind of like district elections, perhaps, for somebody to oversee and to manage the co-ops?
Yeah, and it gives, you know, it gives farmers a voice in their community and a chance to sort of weigh in on what's important to them. For example, when that fair trade premium comes back to their community, what's most important to them? Is it funding child scholarships? Is it funding literacy programs? Is it starting a tree nursery so they can plant more trees the following year? They're able to make those decisions, and we're not coming in and saying, oh, you should start with a nursery or you should start with scholarships. It's really for them to decide. And by giving people the right to make their own decisions, they care for those programs and those decisions far more than they would if it was something that we would be imposing from the outside.
So, Hannah, who all did you bring into this partnership to make it work? You've got We've met Whole Foods, we met Tropic Trade. Who else?
Our exporter is Perry Exports, Ursula and Ralph Perry, are Haitians that have been very much involved in this program for many years, doing a lot of field work. I mentioned TechnoServe is a development organization that's done some really great work the last few years in Haiti. And then really, you know, every year, John, Fairtrade USA, and a coalition from Whole Foods go down to Haiti, check in with the farmers, check in with our development partners and our exporter, and problem solve and see how we keep this program going and growing. And you just don't see that kind of effort from, you know, any other supermarket in the business or any other importer that you come across.
Is this a government program?
Nope, not at all. It's Fairtrade USA is a nonprofit organization, and the rest of our supply chain partners are our businesses.
So you didn't get any of the billions of dollars that have been handed out by the government over there?
No, Fairtrade USA did not.
Okay. John, you've been there a number of years. What do you see as in terms of the development of the project? Is it growing or shrinking?
Oh, it's been growing by leaps and bounds, Michael, and primarily because of a focus by TechnoServe in growing the number of certified producers over the years. However, the effort, the important thing is to make it sustainable. And sustainability is, of course, needs transparency and commitment over time. So I would say we've had fantastic growth. I mean, Matt mentioned we started in 2008 with our first mangoes to Whole Foods. That program has grown at a compounded annual growth rate of about 50% a year. I don't think we're going to see that kind of percentage growth in the future as we start to bump up against capacity of the exporters. And but we would certainly like to be able to match up our efforts with increasing consumption to spread the program beyond where it is now.
Which would be the responsibility of those who sell the mangoes to let the world know what exactly it is they have to sell, which is the Francique mango. I want a taste of the Francique mango, and I can't have one until early summer. Oh, my goodness. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, today we're in the Caribbean island of Haiti, half island of Haiti, and talking about a wonderful new program to bring money to the farmers who deserve it. Right back with Can We Spread This Program Elsewhere? Well, it doesn't get much better than the Francique mango, but you can't have one until late spring, early summer. So mark it on your calendar, Francique mangoes. So the question comes to us for Matt Rogers of Whole Foods, John Musser of Tropic Trade, Hannah Freeman of Fairtrade USA. Can this model be exported to other countries, to other areas, to other crops? I think of Larry Jacobs and Del Cabo Collective of cherry tomato growers in Cabo San Lucas and how he's taking that model of a collective of small farms and moving them all the way across the world to Tanzania. And I'm wondering, is this something that we can spread around the world, Hannah?
Yeah, absolutely, and it is spread around the world. You can get fair trade tomatoes from Del Cabo, from Baja California. You can get fair trade blue jeans that are produced in Sri Lanka and sold by Patagonia. This model is spread around the world, and it's very much consumer-driven. If consumers, you know, storm into Whole Foods when these mangoes come into harvest and fill up their shopping carts, then Whole Foods can do more and more and more, and they can buy fair trade avocados and melons and all these other products because they're able to show that these are meeting a consumer demand and are driving business.
John Musser of Tropic Trade is the know-how there out in the field to help people, help indigenous people do these things, grow these products.
Well, there generally there isn't that much, let's say, education that is spread around on agricultural practices on a formal basis. Farmers tend to grow up in farming communities. We do provide, for instance, organizations like TechnoServe can provide training seminars for people to bring them up to speed with recommended practices and so forth. So the model is there. I guess in any specific country situation, it really depends on the kind of human resources that are available and the money to pay for them to take it to the next level.
And, of course, the money comes from consumers. Matt Rogers, do we consumers have the financial wherewithal to do this? Do we have the incentive? Are we behind it enough? You folks at Whole Foods certainly are tuned into it, but can we change the world with our pocketbook?
Oh, we can absolutely change the world with our pocketbooks, and it's actually a relatively easy thing that people can do every day, you know, deciding what you buy and how does that align with your own values. And certifications like Fair Trade are tools for people to use, to look for and to make that decision. I'm going to pay a little more for this because I know what it does. It's absolutely very powerful for customers to make that kind of decision. And, you know, what we find that people do have the appetite for it. Our sales of Fair Trade certified products have been booming. It's certainly one of the fastest growing categories of Whole Foods Market because of that knowledge that people have, you know, that transparency, that choice that they can make.
Well, folks, there you are. This has been the 1038th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Can the partnership developed to grow and distribute mangoes in Haiti be made to work elsewhere? What do you think? We'll have to file this under Michael Olson's first law of the food chain, which is agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. And we'll thank Matt Rogers of Whole Foods, John Musser of Tropic Trade, and Hannah Freeman of Fair Trade USA. And, of course, thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye.
This is the ZBS Radio Network.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.